The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, and the Dripping JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. It's World Daily. We're almost done the group phase. Almost. Today, God, my eyes are awful, especially when it's this early and especially when it's really overcast here. It's actually raining for the first time in Vancouver. Wong, I was right. The weather here sucks. After what? 10, 11, 12 days of nothing but blue skies and sunshine? We got just miserable weather today. So I feel far more... This is how it is being a Vancouverite. Right, Asim, Rayman?
That's how it is? This is exactly it. Yeah. No, it's pouring. It's coming down pretty good.
Let me do the intros first before I get to today's
game. Have you guys hung out yet?
No, we're training. I've been the most antisocial person ever since I've been here.
It's busy. This World Cup's been way busier than I think anticipated. Obviously knew it was going to be busy and everything, but every time there is a moment, I got to put this thing together. I got to work on this. So, which is great.
It's true.
No complaints.
Right?
Awesome.
From columns and God knows what. Like, I haven't been out hardly at all. I've been out, I think, twice since I got here for fun.
Well, you have to cover the team, and then you have to cover the decoy team.
That's right. Exactly. There's two teams to cover. It's tough. Arash Madani.
Great.
Jimmy Brennan's here, and there's Amy Walsh. There's Jeff Cole. And that was Asa Rahman. You heard I'm James Sharman. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot going on, and I hope to be here longer. I would really hope to be here longer, but instead flying to LA later today and then hopefully Houston, which I never usually say, hopefully Houston, but hopefully Houston. Anyway, today, everyone, football fans, we have Norway against France. Yes, please. We'll have some of that. That's in Group I, as well as Senegal against Iraq. Group H sees Cape Verde or Cabo Verde or however you want to pronounce it.
Cabo Verde.
Saudi Arabia, Uruguay, Spain. And in Group G, Egypt, Iran, New Zealand, Belgium. Big game there in Vancouver, actually, I may add, for that one. Mm-hmm. Did you see last night, by the way, before we get to today's games? So the States lose to Turkey, right? Quite a game, actually. 9 changes for Mauricio Pochettino, Dubs. And then afterwards, he gets all upset because the line of questioning wasn't celebratory. You know, he's saying not one person said congratulations, basically. And we won the group, guys. We won the group, but of course, the US media is focusing on the loss. Now, my take is very briefly, this is tournament management. It's what you do in tournaments like World Cups. If you get a chance to rotate and rest players, you do it. So what if you lose the last game? Or is it a bit of a momentum killer, this one?
I don't know. I'm stuck on you saying celebratory instead of celebratory, but I can move on
from
that.
That's an English thing.
aluminium. I see.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
So unlike Poch, I'm able to forge ahead here. So no, I think it is a little bit of a momentum killer. You obviously
forge ahead. That's good. Forge. Aluminium.
Well, see, I wasn't even thinking about that. That's pure coincidence, but I'll go with it. I'll say that I planned it. You have the luxury, right, of the rotation. You have 4 guys on yellows who are really integral to the way that you play and are going to be key to your success if you want to make a deep run. And you get to rest them and you give other players a chance to find the rhythm, to get their feet underneath them as part of a World Cup and give them that experience. You get to see Sebastian Berhalter bury a goal. You know, the game was really exciting and wide open and lots of USA, USA. But I was really, really pleased to see Arda Güler not only open the scoring, but then I think megged Pulisic in the corner and they were able to get one, pip them just at the end. So that was delightful, I think, for everybody watching that spectacle, save for the fans in the stadium and the U.S. themselves. But yes, it's a consideration. It's something that you have to weigh. And we kind of lived it a little bit here in Canada, where it was very polarized response to Canada's loss to Switzerland. It was, I think, you know, Jimmy and I were on One Soccer last night with Arash as well, actually. And we were talking about trying to make sense of all of it, reconciling those two things where we can hold them to a higher standard. If they'd played their best, they could have beaten a top 20 side in the Swiss. And Jesse Marsh saying, wake the F up, according to Promise David, right? And I was unsure whether it was tactics or whether it was just the team lacking that incision, lacking that fight with a little bit of fatigue. And then everybody else saying, you know, we're at a point where we just should be celebrating. It was the first point in this World Cup. It was the first win, first time through to knockouts. But you can do both. And I think we're at a point in this program's history where you need to. You can hold them to account, but you can also celebrate the milestones. So to turn it to the U.S., I think you have to do the same thing, but I think it rankles the people in charge, whether it's Jesse Marsh or Mauricio Pochettino, where it's just like, no, you need to back us. You need to back us blindly. Well, it's not that if you're going to be a true soccer fan. And I think we've arrived at this point. I think the U.S. and Canada, where Mexico is, you know, where like it's ardent, rabid fans who are going to criticize you. Sometimes it's not warranted, but you just have to have a thick skin and you keep forging ahead.
Hey, Aresh, so how much of a cheerleader's role should the media have in a World Cup? It's not our job, generally speaking, is to report on what we see. But when a Poch, for example, you know, is a little bit disappointed in that response, he's suggesting that the media should be get the old pom-poms out a little bit here and start supporting the team. Is a World Cup different to other sports?
No. I mean, to me, it's zero. Like, I think if you're the morning breakfast show in Vancouver and you're doing hits at 7 a.m, that's so different than the people who are showing up to training and are on the beat day in, day out, around doing actual soccer, football stories, etc. I totally agree with Amy. Like, to me, the story of this entire World Cup so far, Canada aside, was what we saw yesterday. Ecuador is down 1-0 to Germany. Ecuador, little old Ecuador, comes back and beats Germany. And then afterwards, the captain says, this is the quote, "The difference today was that the opponent wanted to win more than us." Meanwhile, earlier that day, the head coach of the Canadian team is talking about how passive his team has been to open matches, to open second halves. And I don't know about you guys, I saw that as a finger point that, hey, this isn't on me, this is on them. And I'm like, what is happening here? I found both head coaches, Canada and U.S., are so obsessed with controlling the message, and they just want to own this public narrative more than anything else. It's been very, very bizarre to me.
You know, we're slipping a lot of Canada in right now. So, JC, we better roll the Timmy Horton's intro here because I suspect this conversation could go in numerous directions, but Canada's going to be a big focal point.
Well, in that case, it's World Cup Watch Canada, brought to you by Tim Hortons. It's game. On with Tim.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
Game on with Tim's. Game on with Jesse Marsh. Jimmy, so you hear what Aresh says there. You've been a coach. I suspect you didn't care so much about what the media, I mean, CPL media was probably a little bit different to the World Cup, I imagine.
No, not much. Not much difference.
but controlling that message, do you see that from both Poch and Jesse Marsh? And are they going about it the right way?
It's a funny one. I get what Aresh is saying. And
yeah, there is sometimes a narrative or messages that coach want to say, but it is difficult. You imagine every day trying to come up with a story or something to say, and that's my mother. And
Stella.
All right. And it becomes a little bit repetitive sometimes, doesn't it? You know, that message with coaches, and you're trying to figure out ways to say things. And at the end of the day, when a manager, you know, points a finger at the players, it's because you train all week. And I would say it's like a racehorse. I can train him, I can feed him, I can do everything, but I don't know how he's going to run on the race. And it's no different with football as well. You can get your objectives. You say, this is what we're focused on. This is how we're going to play. We're going to, you know, a high block, and we're going to press in these zones. And then sometimes first 10 minutes of the match, you look at your assistant coach and go, what the hell was that? We didn't train this all week, but what are they doing right now? And then they just go a little bit rogue sometimes with players. And then you got to try to rein them back in. And so once the players step on the pitch, that now is the player's role. That's all on the players. They've got to go perform now. They know the message. They know what they have to do. And the coaches are on the sidelines, and they're just trying to orchestrate. And if they go off track a little bit, try to pull them back on. But it really is out of your control at times once the players step on, because that's what the players are paid for, is go perform now. You've been told what to do, go do it. And then if you end up losing a match as a manager, you're frustrated now because you've gone, you know, this isn't really what we worked on all week, but they're showing something completely different than what they're meant to be doing. So a little bit of frustration comes out in a manager too then, right? Because then they get frustrated. When things go well, then the manager said, perfect. The plan went according to plan. Players executed. It was brilliant. So that's where a lot of the frustration comes from, is when the players step out and they don't perform, and the manager's going, what the hell was this? We should have won this game. Our tactics were this and we didn't do this. So I get it as a manager in his perspective, because it does get frustrating sometimes. It really does. And when expectations are high and you're meant to win and you don't get the results that you feel you should have with the talent that you have, it does become frustrating. And I think that's where sometimes managers go off the rail a little bit. And I think sometimes you do your interview and then you walk away and then you reflect and think, maybe I shouldn't have said that, or maybe I shouldn't have done this. But in the heat of the moment, a little bit of frustration comes out sometimes.
And Asa, let's be honest, both Pochettino and Jesse Marsh, they both rate themselves pretty highly as managers as well. So when the message isn't delivered properly, they're happy to kind of cast, well, that wasn't me. I told them to do this, but they just didn't do it. And in Poch's case, 9 changes. You know, obviously what he wanted from the training pitch didn't relate to what he saw on the field. So it's all about the players. And he gets angry and upset, and then suddenly it's the media's fault.
Well, that's most managers, though, right? Most will be confident about their abilities and what they want to do. When it comes to Poch, I have no issues with the way they handled that situation. To your point earlier, James, job was done. You have to win the group. Did that. Know what's ahead of you. And there is a bit of tournament management going into a match like that. So I think that you have to be, as a manager in a tournament, you have to have some conviction and be confident in your game plan, and understand that the next match is the most important one. And then you compare it to what Jesse does. He has to feel the same way through these games and these decisions. And Arash mentioned as well, it's up to reporters, journalists, the people that are covering this team to ask those questions, and there's no issue with it. So I was ready to walk out after Dubs had her first comments, because it's exactly how I felt. And the fact that, no, like in a good way, because it's all I wanted to say today, is that we are able to and should be asking the questions about Alphonso Davies and the squad selection going into this game, and then tactics as well. Because, yes, Switzerland, it was expected to finish higher. I think when you look at the group, it's probably how people anticipated it going, with Switzerland on top, Canada second, Bosnia third, Qatar. That's probably what odds makers would have had. BetMGM probably had that, right? In that order, as far as the odds go.
slid.
So that's
slid in.
Yeah. So good. Come back anytime you like.
If you can mix in a double double and a toasted bagel with cream cheese, I'm really going to be impressed.
Arash, you too. You guys just come on.
Wow, anytime. Look at that. You guys are going to be here a lot.
But massive opportunity for Canada to not have to win that game at home, but get the draw. And then the other thing, for going back to Marsh and sort of the message and the messaging through these games, the comment that kind of sticks out to me through this as well is what he said, the worst way to get a draw is to play for a draw. Mm-hmm. Sounded really cool in the moment. But then looking back, I don't think you have to apologize for getting a draw. Like, if that's what's needed to win the group, get it done however you have to get it done. And I think that this match was an opportunity for Canada to maybe look a little bit different. He admitted it was great to hear him say and admit that, you know, he thought about going to a back five at halftime, starting the second half with a back five. Yeah. Maybe that's what was required in a game like this where you're dealing with so many injuries. You do just have to get the draw. And if they had somehow just kind of parked the bus and maybe tried to hit on the counter with the pace that we've seen Canada have over the last few years, you know, just throwing it up to Tejan or Ali and letting them go in transition moments and, yeah, having, you know, 10 or 11 behind the ball and looking to hit on the counter, and they got the one goal, ended up 1-1 or whatever. Yeah, it would have been fine. It would have been a different way to kind of go and get the result. And I think that's what I was curious to see in a game like this. But yeah, different tactics for Marsh. It's been an aggressive style from the get-go from Canada. And yeah, he's entitled to do so. So I think it's been fun to kind of cover and ask these questions as well in a tournament like this.
What, so can this I load in a comment?
Sorry, go ahead, Amy.
No, you go on.
Well, this was the quote that got me because, like, to me, the result is the result. But the urgency of the last 25 minutes was so different than the first 65 minutes. Mm-hmm. And obviously, at that point, Switzerland has a 2-0 lead. They're playing different tactically, et cetera. We understand all of that. But Marsh's quote, this was it. When the occasion gets momentous, players get tighter, and their natural reaction is to hold back instead of going for it more. Like, he's saying, this is not on me. It's them. They're passive. They're the ones who get tight. Don't be coming at me on anything. Like, to me, a lot of leaders are saying, I have to be better. My bad. We have to be better. I find there's, like, the longer this has gone, not even the longer this has gone, from the beginning with the whole Kyle Larin thing, sitting him for the first game, I don't know. It just seems off, and I have no idea what the relationship is between Davies and Marsh, between Davies and Canada Soccer right now. But we talk about messaging. It goes from he's available to decoy to Alfonso wanted to play, but we didn't let him play. All the while, somebody from Bayern Munich's watching his every move. Like, this whole thing seems very, very strange.
Yeah, I think the Bayern Munich angle is gathering steam. It really is at this point. I'm sure it's happened before, but it doesn't happen often to have a club representative on the training pitch in the room at all times. Just keeping an eye on things and under the guise of, well, he's the physio. He's a personal physio. He knows Fonzie better than anyone, which I'm sure is true. But if you're the coach and listen, did Canada have a choice in this? How much power does Bayern actually have? I'm really curious about this because obviously one of the biggest clubs in the world, yada, yada, yada. Canada, though, is a small little minnow in world football. At the same time, it's under FIFA jurisdiction right now, which means that really Bayern Munich have no say whatsoever, but they do have lots to say because you know that's how football works. I wonder, and does that cause a bit of a chasm there? From what I've seen no chasm. I mean, Fonzie's there. He seems to be getting on with everyone like he always has. He's a popular guy in that room. But beyond the players and you have the coaching staff, do you really think Jesse Marsh wants to have a Bayern Munich representative there? I'm sure he doesn't. It's weird. If nothing else, it's weird. And are they influencing Marsh's decisions? I mean, we won't know until years after this World Cup, because Jesse wouldn't admit to it. Because like you said before, Arash, you know, he wants to be the guy in charge. If he isn't really the guy in charge when it comes to Fonzie, it's a bit of a problem. Because I'm sure he'd love to get him out there against, if he could have given 10, 15 minutes, but it's a bit of a risk because he's come back from an injury. I think in that match, he probably would have loved to have, unless he was accepting the draw there, Dubs, which you mentioned before. You know, that would have been fine.
Yeah, ultimately, I think it's a distraction that they see as advantageous. You know, that it's this decoy, that it's public, it's the red herring for the opponent. But it can become eventually a distraction on the inside. And then it starts to affect the culture of the team and starts to affect kind of what they've worked so hard to create on the inside. And that's where I worry this is. And I wanted to ask you guys who were at the media availability yesterday in Vancouver, did Marsh say that Alfonso went to him and said, I'm ready to play, but he had not yet met the metrics physically in order to do so. So he kind of stood him down. Is that what came out?
Yeah. So basically, from what Jesse said, Fonzie went to him or they were having a conversation. I'm good. I want to play. I can play. But because he hadn't hit those metrics, including top speed, he goes metrics plural, including top speed. But he goes, but he's close and he'll do that today is what Jesse goes. He'll hit that metric today. You know, he's clairvoyant now. Jesse can look ahead into the future, which is good. Convenient for a coach. So who knows whether he can or not. But that was the message, yeah, that he's very close. But he didn't want to put him in that danger. And then Fonzie was disappointed. But then they had another chat later and that Fonzie understood. So that's, you know, I think we discussed this before the World Cup, right? At this point, I'll be surprised if we see him at the World Cup. Mm-hmm. It's all just a bit too much, you know? This guy hasn't played since, hasn't had a minute on the pitch since early May.
And there are 47 other captains in this World Cup who have all been on the pitch.
Yeah. It's a real I mean, listen, it's a crying shame is what it is. You know, if you remove the all the confusion. And does it need to be this confusing? I mean, they've created this a little bit, right? With the conversations with the media, they've kind of created this confusion, which, again, does a room care about it? Jimmy, confusion, when your coach is having a little thing with the media, do the players really give a damn inside that room?
No.
They're not paying any attention, are they?
You don't pay attention to it. You stay away from it all. It's just a distraction, so you... Doesn't matter what the manager's saying or who's saying what. Players don't really read into it and they don't listen to it much. Not at all.
Well, they know, right? I mean, Alistair Johnston was interviewed Asa, right? He's quite a good Alistair, right? Whenever he gets asked a tricky question, he's the guy you want out there. I mean, they would love to parade Alistair out every day because he can handle us beautifully. Because he's likable, he's amusing, but he's also quite intelligent and thoughtful in his answers. So he was asked about, you know, Fonzie, like, do you know? And he goes, oh, listen, this is a World Cup. You know, I think there's certain things we need to keep to ourselves. So I'm not telling you anything. And that's fair enough. That I get. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
So I wonder, like, for Jimmy and Amy, like, as players, are you in the loop on what's going on with Fonzie? Are you wondering what's going on with Fonzie? Like, we've been at this for a month now. Yeah. Like, to me, that's the distraction here.
You know,
because you're with your teammates all the time. You're always talking. You know, if I'm sitting down at breakfast and like, Fonz, how is it? How are you feeling? Yeah, I'm not bad. I'm not far off now. And so the players know what's going on, but they just keep everything tight and don't say much. And a lot of times too, the manager will come in and say, guys, listen, whatever happens or whatever you talk about in-house stays in-house. There's certain things will get out into the media, but some things is between us, so they know.
Mm-hmm. And then, follow-up to that, Jimmy and Dubs, as the opposition, so this has been, you know, a decoy, if you will. How much time would you be spending on the potential of this player playing opposite you in a game? You don't know if they'll get 20 minutes or not. Like, I'm trying to figure out who's spending more energy on this, Canada or the opposition?
It's a good question.
Yeah, I think it's very laborious for Canada, but I don't think like the Swiss gave a shit. Sorry, market.
2305.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they said it's true. As much, right? The coach said it as much. He goes, we just worry about who's out on the pitch. We know who he is, how good he is.
They don't care. Nothing will change. Look, they'll have their set way of how they want to play, how they're going to defend. You know, the ball's on the right side. This is how we do this, how we do that. If Fonzie comes, we double team down this side. And it doesn't change much at all. And it's not a threat. It's not like they're thinking, oh, my God, looking at the clock 20 minutes, like, oh, Fonzie's coming on. You're talking about experienced professional players that play at the highest level. It's just another player that they'll deal with.
Mm-hmm. I really think this it's been a pretty quiet camp for Canada, really, at a World Cup. It could be a lot louder, right? There isn't a hell of a lot. I mean, okay, they draw the first game. Well, a draw, big deal. They smash Qatar, amazing story. The story's been beyond the team itself. It's been the celebration of football. They lose to a better Swiss team. There's a bit of injury intrigue. There's not much going on, really. So this is becoming a storm in a teacup. Or is it a tempest in a teacup?
A tempest in a teacup, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. But storm in a teacup is also the saying. Is it not?
Sure. Picture. I mean.
Yeah. No, it is. That's definitely.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
you can say a storm.
Yeah, a storm in a teacup.
Yeah.
I just know that.
Just like a whirlwind in this little area.
Yeah. I mean, what the hell is a tempest? Who calls it? Wow. Oh, the weather's rolling in. It's been quite a tempest today. Who says that? Anyway, I prefer storm in a teacup. A storm in a teacup. Okay, from this point forward.
So, you know what? That comment, Sharms, brings us perfectly into these comments. The soccer snobbery of this panel is off the charts. One of the worst pods I've ever heard. Holy shite. Agree. Like Canada Soccer, this panel apparently thinks the way to convert more sports fans in Canada to soccer is to insult and mock our ignorance. Doesn't seem like any of the panel were well educated in marketing or basic customer service. They are also paid. Yeah, they are also paid by the CSA. And it seems as the CSA has told all media to stop talking about Davies and stop criticizing Jesse.
Stop talking about him. All we're doing is talking about him. Listen, I've got to pay him a mortgage. You know, if I don't get the CSA paycheck every month, then I'm out of home. I'm homeless. I'm on the streets. Mm-hmm. I love that. CSA is paying us. That's the best one.
That's where I tune out once that dumb message comes across. It's so stupid. The CSA is paying you. Shut up.
Do we criticize? I don't think we criticize the ignorance of the fan base. I think we question perhaps a certain naivety in a certain element of the fan base, mm-hmm. which is true.
But I think we were criticizing the fake outrage of pundits, of fans, of media. And then just one more kind of on that topic. This is from the desk of NGM. I really like Jesse Marsh, but the sycophantic support of what Marsh says and does is irritating. They talk about objectivity, but then the panel spent a lot of the pod rolling their eyes at the opinions and reactions of others. A lot of contempt dripping from their words, especially Sharms.
Well,
you're a bad person, Sharms.
Well, you're terrible.
I would just suggest you don't make so many stupid comments.
Boy.
Okay.
I just think, like, to go back to what we're, yeah, to go back what we're talking about, like on the inside, is this more of a distraction? Like, I think if I'm a player, you're having to manage when you're in front of the media what the messaging is internally. Mm. Yeah, you're sometimes in front of the microphone, and you're doing these mental gymnastics about, oh crap, like, what is it that we're not meant to say? And like, what is the messaging today? And sometimes that's too much for certain players. So when you don't get a player in a mix zone post a game, when the adrenaline's coursing through your veins, that's part of it. It's not just that, oh, they're being a jerk, or, you know, they're not being gracious to the media. It's that you're maybe a young kid, or maybe you're a veteran, and you just don't do well in those situations. And I will also say internally, if I was a player, I'm not saying tactically you deferred to the Swiss, but by keeping Moyes, by keeping Davies on the side, we don't see Nico Seguir. Like, the fact that there was no changes to the back line is very perplexing to me. But just the way they came out, the passivity, like you referenced, Arash, to me, it seemed like you weren't going for it. You were conceding the draw or the win. And whether or not this is the messaging on the inside, who knows? But I'm just saying, if I was a player and we were playing the long game, we're going to take it in the teeth. We're going to take the L or whatever it is. We're not going to finish top of the group. You don't know what the scenario is after the fact. And we're looking forward to Sunday. We're conceding the game and we're saying we're going to be on short rest. So we're saving these guys. Mm. I would be pissed as a player. I want to go for the win, even if it's for the betterment of the team and making a deeper run in a tournament. It's a terrible feeling going out and playing for something that is less than you think you can achieve. So if you have a criticism that you want to leverage at Jesse Marsh, I think it's that one. You know, it's that, like, in all this, you know, this song and dance and the decoys and everything that's happening, if you're a player on the inside, you risk losing that precious culture and the allegiance and all the players drinking the Kool-Aid because you've made this decision. And again, it's a little bit of an accusation, but if that's the way it went, I would not be happy if I was a player.
Well, okay, spinning it back to Poch now. Poch makes 9 changes. Now, he'd won the group already. He's allowed that, afforded that. At the same time, if you're on that bench or you're in that room and he's not conceding defeat necessarily, mm-hmm. but he's saying this game's not important to us, but has he earned that, Jimmy, as a team that's won the first 2 games? Whereas in Canada's case, they still really needed a result in that match to win the group. That being said, listen, it's turned out beautifully for them, right? Aside from leaving Vancouver against South Africa.
Yeah, look, Poch makes 9 changes. It's a chance for those players that have been on the bench to get out there and showcase that they deserve to be there. And it's up to them to go out and get the result. Your starters are sitting down now. You've got a shot because now you're going into the 32. You could be going to the 16. You want to be one of the first players that he calls off the bench. So that there is a showcase for the guys that have been on the bench. Some stood out, some didn't. And that would be in Poch's mind saying, okay, right, you showed up. You didn't show up. I can't rely on you in the next one. I'm going to rely on this guy. And that's the way it works. And you never as a manager say, hey, we're going to play for a draw. You're always going out to win games. That's what sport is all about. It's all about winning. Now, the players, when we're out there and you're in your huddle, say, hey, one thing we can't do is lose this match. We cannot lose. We're going for the win. But if we get into that draw situation, we defend like hell to make sure that we get something out of this game. But you're going out there to win.
That's a good point. I guess it's more than just win, lose, and draw. It's win, lose, draw, and don't lose.
don't
it's
lose.
True. It's a very different frame of mind sometimes.
Yeah. I never thought about that before. That's interesting. Don't lose. Hey, Asa, by the way, I had to mention, because I know you're going to get him in at some point. Yes, we know Sebastian Berhalter scored and got an assist. And what a great performance. You know, the Whitecaps representing yesterday over the World Cup, in general in the World Cup, actually. So here's your platform. Give some love to your Vancouver Whitecapians.
Hi, you've done it. No, Berhalter was great. Pedro Vite was awesome as well. Maybe the other one you're going to mention. Andres Cubas. Yeah, it's been really neat to see all these Whitecaps players perform on this stage, and probably could have used a couple with Canada. Can we get into that? No. It was great to see the guys that went to Whitecaps training as well yesterday to kind of see how things are going over there. Thomas Muller, Ryan Gault out on the pitch. So, looking forward to covering the Caps again. But it's been awesome to see these guys perform on the stage. But I think, to switch it a little bit, MLS in general performed quite well. It's been really neat to see the gap has definitely closed. MLS players performing. The one in Argentina is doing all right. Right across the board, Petr Musa with Croatia, like not looking out of place, earning minutes, starting, contributing, making a difference. And I think they were just going to see the level continue to grow in MLS, which is awesome, especially when you're hosting a World Cup like this.
Arash, do you reckon it will result in more people watching MLS or more people watching CPL or more people watching NSL? Is that? I mean, I spoke to Peter Agrusso yesterday. I wrote a column, which is, I think, dropping today on sportsnet.ca. If out of this, if in 6 months from now we look at the attendance and nothing's changed, that won't be ideal. Well, it'd be a bit damning, but I'm not saying it's going to happen, but this has to be the legacy, surely.
Yeah, I honestly don't know, Sharms. I was actually thinking about this last night, if A translates to B. Because coming out of this World Cup, forget the Canadian leagues for a minute, Are the 4 and 5 million Canadians who are watching this World Cup now going to be following what Alistair's doing in Scotland, what Laren's doing in Southampton, what Jonathan David's going to be doing wherever Jonathan David's going to play next year? I don't know. Like, so to me, the CPL and the NSL, outside of the very hardcore fan base, is very much people going for a community outing, for something to do, to take the kids, et cetera, et cetera. The MLS fan base, I think, is a little different. But my fear on the MLS side is how many franchises are going to exist in this country in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And so this "we're a football nation" thing, what is that if three becomes one, and then how long does one exist? So I don't know how this translates. I really don't. If the women go on a run next summer in Brazil, does that lead to more people coming to NSL games? I don't know. Maybe if there's a bunch of the national team players playing in the NSL. Maybe.
That's it, right? That's it. With the women's team, I think you can look at the pathway being genuine from the NSL. Yeah. We are yet to see that from CPL to the national team. You know, I don't think we'll see it for years. There's a couple here and there. The Shafts of the world, Alistair's of the world, you know.
Joel Waterman's of the world.
Joel Waterman, yeah, exactly, right? There are some, but there aren't many. And that's a long time removed now, it seems. It seems that Canada, Dubs, has more riding on it as a nation than most nations, most host nations. Most host nations are football nations already, right? And if France hosts a World Cup or Germany, like, it's not going to move the needle. Guess what? It's a really popular sport in those countries anyway. There's so much riding on it for Canada. This has to be the tipping point.
Yeah, and I think that's where it takes us back as the connecting piece, not to make us, you know, more self-important, or no, like the media and the ASAs, you know, ASA, you having those watch parties, well, not really watch parties, but you've got cameras trained on like Colin Miller and Alan Arrington and ex-Canadian men's national team players who have gone on and done work in the sport. And then you've got the camera trained on them as they're watching the men's national team game. And you've done wonderful stories about the grassroots and the community where those ties run deep to the national team, not so much anymore. You know, there's not tons of representation of BC on this current iteration of the men's national team, but historically on both the men's and the women's side, BC has been the pipeline to the national team. So you tapping into that is just brilliant. But to go back to is somebody following Alistair Johnston, who loves the way that he plays, who loves the way that he lights up in front of a camera and a microphone, are they going to make the effort to follow him to Celtic, or if he ends up at Fulham, or if, you know, wherever his career trajectory takes him? The media and the storytelling and the storylines are an important piece of that. And again, it's not, you know, making us seem more important than we actually are, but especially on the women's side, like, you have to get to know the players and you have to care about the players in order for there to be growth, in order for there to be interest. Because there's so many, you know, talking about decoys and shiny objects, there's so many things that can take your attention. So you have to be invested in these players. And I think going back to Jesse Marsh, whether this is sycophantic or not, what he has done a good job of doing with this team and promoting is that they are the people's team, and that he wants them to be known doing camps in Halifax and in Montreal when there are not even any internationals on the docket in those markets. So he's done that very well. So can you compartmentalize the gamesmanship and the jockeying and the decoys of the World Cup to try to leverage and glean an advantage outside of what it means to be a national team coach and promoting your players in the program? I think you have to continue to do both. Yeah. So if I'm going to leverage a criticism, Adam, it's that you can't forget that your job and what you seem to be most passionate about is promoting these players. And by muzzling them, in a sense, by, you know, the internal messaging is so complicated that they can't speak freely and be themselves, then you've done yourself and the program a disservice.
Yeah, I think what Amy's making here is, like, you need a connection, a real connection between the people and on the pitch and the people coming to invest their time, their money, their passion into this thing. And honestly, like if I'm thinking back to when I was like 10, 11, 12 years old, growing up in Truro, Nova Scotia, if I heard a national team player was coming to run a clinic in Halifax, like that would have been a huge deal. And that connection would have been like a forever thing. That's where you create these core memories mm-hmm. that last a long time, a connection that's going to last a long time. That's why the NSL, that's why the PWHL, that's what the WNBA, like these three leagues have figured that out. Mm. They figured that out with young people and families. You go to those games, there's nobody in a suit. There's nobody in a collared shirt. It's real people and real fans who care. And so that's the name of the game, to like leave the lasting whatever of all of this.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rush.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Lisa.
I was going to say CEVL has done that as well. Totally. Going back to like the, I guess, yeah, the media's role. The other hope from this is that there's investment as well, like financial mm-hmm. investment from the sponsorship side. Dubs, you mentioned those stories, which I've enjoyed telling, but I've pitched these ideas over and over again. And it wasn't until this World Cup through a Fortis BC sponsorship that we've been able to dedicate the time and resources to do this project. And I think coming out of it, it'd be great to get more sponsorship for these types of things, because we can't just keep relying on that sweet, sweet CSA money that we're all getting. We need more corporate support to invest in the storytelling and on the media side to kind of continue to work and tell these stories, right?
Yeah, and listen, post-World Cup, bums and seats, yeah, but it's all about corporate Canada, right? We are a soccer country. The fan base is clearly here with numbers and people that care about soccer. I believe that now. I didn't before. I do now. But it's about corporate Canada. Will they step up? That will really make us a soccer country. This whole thing about messages and stories and game, I agree, but the time for that is not during the World Cup. During the World Cups, I'm fine if they shut up their players away, quite honestly. It's all about results. And if they determine that we don't want to get these guys out there too much, then we'll do that. That being said, last week, Fonzie very quietly did a autograph signing with BMO at a brick somewhere outside Vancouver, right? So they are putting some players out there. They're giving the two or three players before every training session. I don't need stories, personal stories from the players during World Cups, because the results are more important, and keeping the distractions to a minimum for me, that is important for a player to keep them focused on the job at hand. Because quite honestly, if they go out and beat South Africa that week, is going to be the biggest week of this World Cup, and maybe the biggest week ever for Canadian soccer, building up to potentially a match against the Dutch, maybe whoever it's going to be, Morocco. Could be Morocco actually again, but for the Dutch still. That is going to be the week, and that will do so much for the growth of the sport in this country, rather than, you know, parading out a line of players for podcasts and interviews. And this is me as a fan. This is not me as a broadcaster, because Christ, as a broadcaster, of course, I want more access, but I don't expect it during a World Cup or any tournament.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, look, part of the reason too that they're out and doing autographs and going here and there is that's a lot of that's got to do with sponsorship as well, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So the sponsorship, they'll pay and say, hey, listen, we want a couple of appearances. And so the players have to go out and do that. That's understandable. In terms of, you know, the stories that come out from individuals, yeah, sometimes I'm not too worried about that, because I personally don't care. I care about the performance on the game, how they play, getting results. That's where I like. I'm more into the football, the tactical, the performance space. That's the area that I like. And then, but you know, at the same time, some people do like to hear the stories in the backgrounds of certain individuals and have those intimate conversations. Right? It's each to their own. Mm-hmm. And you really gotta, you know, appease the masses. You know, everybody's got their own little spots that they like, and in certain ways that you can make these players household names. You know, in my opinion, it's their performance and how they play and how they stand out. That's where they're going to elevate their game, and I'm going to go, oh, that's my guy. Other people can relate to, say, for instance, Alistair Johnson, when he sits down and he does his interviews, and people go, oh, what an absolute gentleman is, and he's a family man, and then people relate to that, and then that's who their players and who they end up following. So it's all different, but those stories do have to come out, because that's the only way that you're going to grow this game and create high-profile players in this country.
Yeah, but just don't expect them during a World Cup. That's my point, Dubs. Don't expect them during the World Cup. Pre-tape all you want and get these lovely, beautifully, and they're great features TSN are putting together. They're great. Mm-hmm. But they're recorded months ago, right? I don't expect to get that message during the World Cup necessarily. Although, well, Dubs, did you see the Canada Soccer's releasing these videos from inside the room, right? Yeah. And the most recent one I saw was in the meeting when Ishmael Kone spoke to his teammates and Max Crapaud. Tell you what, you haven't seen it. I put it on social, my socials. Take a look. I mean, these guys are really very impressive individuals. And I felt inspired listening to them. Very, very, really great content. Great content. That stuff can do some good.
Yeah. And for all of the accusations against Kone and, you know, being difficult and not being a professional, like, he spoke with such maturity and conviction, didn't he? Yeah. Like, very emotional, obviously, but stayed composed. And same with Max, who had obviously just lived that, and Tejan as well, and same as Moyes. So, you know, them saying, like, we've experienced the highest of highs together, but we've also experienced the lowest of lows. And let's just keep layering on to the storylines in this team. But, I mean, to what Jimmy was saying, what you said about the World Cup, like, you still have somebody like a Promise David who seems to not have a filter, but endears himself to everybody, whether you're an old head and looking at tactics and you're a passionate, ardent fan of the game, or somebody who's new. So I'm just going to load in this comment. This is one of our favorites here, Trouty McTroutrout. He said, I missed a lively debate, but isn't that what we wanted? A new wave of soccer fans, a bigger profile in Canada. Whether we signed up for it or not, all us old heads are unofficial ambassadors now. Noobs or newbies are going to have questions or comments, and it's our job to rep the sport so the interest stays after the tournament leaves. At least that's what I'm doing. So thank you for that, because I think that's where we've kind of arrived. Mm-hmm. Right, with our discussion, is that you have to, like, the tentacles have to extend, you know, from coast to coast, and you have to gather everybody up and welcome them in, and not gatekeep on the fandom for this team.
Yeah.
Okay. So if it's about winning, what are you going to do with Tejan on Sunday?
Ooh, that's a great question. Mm. Yeah, we touched on that yesterday. I think quietly, he's had quite a disappointing World Cup so far.
I don't think it's quiet.
Like, no, he was good against Qatar.
But yeah, everyone was, though.
Yeah.
But you had to start, like, the pressure was on to get the goal early to ease the pressure, right? And he delivered that right-hand side. The field was tilted towards the Qatari goal, but it was also, the heat map was on fire on the right-hand side, and that was led by Tejan. And also Alistair and the combination play that was happening over there.
That right side was very good, yes. You're right.
Yes. So you can't discount that. Yes, has he been disappointing versus Bosnia and of course, versus the Swiss? I absolutely wanted more out of him. But if I'm Jesse Marsh, I'm going with him again versus South Africa.
The quality is there. He's too good. Yeah. I think he's got to keep playing. Disappointing in that he's not creating enough, but I don't know if I see a whole lot of mistakes from him. I don't know if you guys are seeing it differently. Mm-hmm. For me, it's just like, you know, he's great. He's one of our most creative attacking players, and we're not generating enough. But I still think that he's such a quality player that he needs to play. The other part of it, I think, is that the team just couldn't get going without Eustachio. Like, there's such a drop-off. Nothing against Schwanier, but you're just getting so far down the depth chart when you're missing guys like Marcelo Flores, Eustachio, Kone. Like, it just, the levels dip. And the second Eustachio comes into that game, we can move the ball. Like, the movement's just way quicker. It's, it's in the right areas. It's setting up the next person for success. I just think that Tejan is still reliant on that service, getting it early so he can take people on when it's one-on-one. I think that the quality's there. He's still too good. And hopefully, yeah, they can get Stakio back on the pitch and things can kind of tick on here against South Africa.
If there was a cerebral, composed winger available to them, I think, okay, that might be an option against a team like South Africa, who's going to be sitting a lot deeper. But there isn't that player available. Liam Miller's a go-at-them player. Ali's a go-at-them player. Yeah. Tejan's a go-at-them player. If Marcelo Flores was on this team, maybe that would be, you know, something to consider. But I'm with you. I think Tejan's got too much quality, and he'll come through in the end. Hey, Jimmy, with your Stakio, so he's only good for half an hour. He knows his body. It's a World Cup, though, right? And we saw what an impact he made when he came on. He couldn't have been that hurt, right? If he can do half an hour, it's not a fitness issue. He's played minutes, not a ton of minutes, in fairness. If you go back to March and his various injuries, and he's played a lot of football in the last little while, maybe that's why. I'm not criticizing him, but do you think he should, you know, put himself out there and to start that game and to see how far he could go?
No, I think he done the right thing. You come on, get your legs going, play 30 minutes, get good recovery, and he's going to end up starting the next match and he'll be fit and healthy and ready to go. I think there'll be a few changes going into this next game as well. You know,
what are you thinking?
I know we're talking about Buchanan, and you know, I said it before, the left back that he's going to play against isn't going to be as good as what Rodriguez is from Switzerland. Rodriguez is a very good defender, and you're talking a guy that played for AC Milan, played in the top leagues, and he's played against some unbelievable wingers. He didn't let Buchanan breathe at all. He smothered him. And that's where I think Buchanan's got to get a little bit better, where he's got to start thinking about his opponent. How do I create space? What do I need to do? Do I come inside? Do I take him long? And but against South Africa, their left back is nowhere near as good as what Rodriguez is. So you'll see Buchanan getting some joy down that right-hand side. That's for sure during the next match. And I think Stakio will be in the middle of the park. I'd like to see Bambito start at center back, because South Africa is going to be very good on the counter. They got a lot of pace. We need pace back there. And then promise David, how long is he going to play? Is he going to play longer than 20? Hopefully he gets maybe a half in the next match, because we need that big body, that big presence, but it's how long he can last for. So I think there will be a couple of changes going into this match. And I think at the end of the day, you go put your best 11 out.
I guess it's still a gamble though, Bombido, isn't it? He hasn't played 45 minutes in this World Cup, 30 minutes in a friendly, nothing prior to that since October or whenever it was he did his leg.
Did you see that sprint, though?
Oh, I know. I forget who said it, that sprint, because it was mentioned to them in the availability. Maybe Jesse, I forget now, said, yeah, that wasn't even Moyes at 50%. He would have crushed Promise if he was actually really giving it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's fit to start. Just haven't seen enough of him. But to Jimmy's point, like, they have to be conscious and aware of that counter. Like, I know this is a better matchup than South Korea, but watching South Africa play, they are looking for it. Like, they have been doing this even at club level with the Sundowns. Like, they want a hit on that counter, and they're totally comfortable putting everybody behind the ball and then somehow going 4v3. Like, it's wild to watch, because they create a numerical advantage on the counter where they just like bomb forward and get extras and somehow outnumber you in these transition moments as well. So yeah, they'll have to, Canada's going to have to be so conscious of it, because that's probably one of the weaknesses for Canada. One of the things that they've kind of struggled with going into the friendlies leading up to this tournament as well, against Uzbekistan and Ireland, you know, didn't have to face many of those moments against Bosnia and Qatar or even really Switzerland. But I think that you do have these transition moments that could be concerning for Canada defensively.
I am hearing a lot of overconfidence from media, from fans ahead of this match, which sets it up for, you know, let's say Canada loses this, then it's suddenly a disappointing World Cup. South Africa's no pushover, like you said there. Yeah. So they're a good team, right? They're top their group. They deserve to be where they're at. Now, is Canada on paper a better team? Yeah, but this is knockout football. On paper doesn't mean that much, generally speaking. And I would be very reticent to over-promote Canada's chances in this. It's going to be a tight game, I bet you. It's not going to be a Qatar, put it that way. And yeah. We have the potential of the old penalty shootout, just putting it out there.
That's oh, they're practicing the penalties. You can be sure.
Yeah. Do you practice penalties, or is it all between the ears, Dubs?
You practice them. You practice them. Yeah. You actually do it so that you can replicate
some teams don't know, right? Moment. We don't need to practice penalties. It's all about the moment. I never understood
just,
that.
Just be careful, because apparently when the occasion gets momentous, players get a little tighter.
Well, we've seen that, and we've heard that, haven't we? Well, I mean, in that case, so Fonzie actually is pretty good from the spot. Although someone's probably got some stats which says he's terrible from the spot. But he would be obviously a penalty taker. If he's not good to go, but it's going towards that, and we're deep in extra time, and Jesse's kept a sub, dear. Does a Fonzie come on? And is that when we see him? We see him for 5 minutes of extra time and then a shootout? Oh, God, I hope not as well. It'd be awful. Imagine the pressure on the guy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Let's not talk about penalties right now. Okay. Well, it's better to react to penalties.
You're the one who brought it up, Charlie.
I know. Arash.
Nobody else is talking about it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. By the way, I got this great – I see Scotland-Brazil yesterday, right? And Steve Clarke, by the way. I mean, Steve Clarke's got to try a little bit harder, hasn't he? I mean, that's not a guy – he's not Mel Gibson in Braveheart, is he? So, but this my sister sent this quote from way back when. This is when Brazil played Scotland in 1982. So this Schutz, some guy on social media, my favorite Scotland against Brazil story is the referee saying, "Good luck, may the best team win," to both captains before the game in 1982, and Graeme Souness replying, "I fucking hope not."
I saw that as well. It's so good.
55-20, just JC. But yeah, what a great line. You can just imagine Graeme Souness saying that, eh? That's fantastic. Jimmy, it looks like Scotland's out. They're not mathematically out, I don't think, are they? I don't think they are, but it's not looking good right now, is it?
It's not looking good. Yeah. It's not looking good at all. The results today will decide their future. Right now, they're sitting in that eighth position with 3 points, but Cabo Verde, they'll win today. They'll be on their way in.
Yeah, no, they're my dark horse.
Belgium as well. Belgium gets a result. Scotland's out.
But the Tottenham Army brought so much to the World Cup.
They really did.
If there was a World Cup of fans.
Boston, yeah.
I mean, all they had to do was draw Brazil.
That's all. Just draw Brazil.
Come on, it's not that hard, is it?
That was a tough group.
Man, was it ever, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See Paraguay, Australia last night? I mean, my God, talk about teams paying for a draw. Like, ugh.
Blah. I didn't see
I didn't see it, but zeros, right? And I guess that worked for both of them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I love the post-match interviews with the Aussie media and the coach. The Australians are so Australian. Strange, isn't it? This is brilliant. What was that time? Arash, where can people find you? What are you doing the next little while? Are you back at One Soccer anytime soon?
I was on last night. I'll be on after, I guess on Monday, the day after the match. Yeah. By the way, just some breaking news. Bev Priestman, excited to partner with Celebrity Speakers New Zealand to continue sharing my journey, the lessons along the way, and leading high-performance teams to success. So if you're looking for a motivational speaker, you know where to go to.
Bev.
Good Lord.
All right. She's got some great stories.
She's got some great stories.
Asa, where can we find you?
Yeah, Global BC this weekend. And then, soon Colin Whitecaps games again once they resume play on 7:30 CKNW. So looking forward to that as well.
Dubsy, what's your next project?
My next project is with JC and Wonger, and I believe our own Jimmy B at Earl's today for a watch party.
In Toronto. Nice. Mm-hmm. All right, a bit of FOMO there. Jimmy, aside from Earls, where are we seeing you?
I'll be on One Soccer tonight. And then on TSN for a round of 32.
Nice.
Cool. Oh, and then Saturday I'll be Sportsnet One Soccer again, and then CBC on Sunday.
All right. Good stuff. I'll be in Sportsnet as usual, unless, of course, the bird goes down on the way to L.A. All right. Sweet Prime.
Or if someone called up from single A, or if there's a promotion from single A to double A in the Blue Jay system, in which case the World Cup content gets dropped.
I shall not respond to that. Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you same time, same place. I think tomorrow Saturday, possibly. If not, we'll see you Sunday. Bye.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com to sign up for our newsletter.
Nice. Good show, guys. That was great.
Iraq trying to get us all fired.
Hey, welcome to the club.